Throughout the ages, history has been altered by word of mouth and the misrepresentation of those who might not have been present when some of the world's most significant events took place. Channelers Barry and Connie Strom bring through the spirits of those who actually witnessed or took part in these historical events and lets them tell their stories in their own words. Welcome to Channeling History. And now, here are your hosts, Barry and Connie Strom.
Hey, good evening, everyone, and welcome to Channeling History. We're the only show where we speak to the souls that made things happen, and tonight's not going to be any exception. And we're brought to you on the Parrax Radio Network. I'm Barry Strom, your host, and I'll be doing the channeling tonight.
I'm Connie Strom, your co-host. Tonight, we will be channeling the spirits of the two main Civil War generals, Robert E. Lee and Ulysses Grant. As we celebrate the 4th of July, we need to remember the time when our country was almost torn apart by the Civil War. Lee and Grant led the North and the South in a conflict where brother fought brother and changed America forever. I'll be asking the questions of our guests. All of our shows are available on YouTube channel in Barry's name, or if you'd like to download them, just go to Podomatic.com and search Channeling History.
Okay, now we always give a small disclaimer because we have no idea what our spirit guests are going to say, and we're going to be discussing some subjects today that are very touchy. So, the opinions or statements voiced on our show are the channeled words of the spirits and do not necessarily reflect our opinions, those of the Parrax Network, or of our sponsors. And before we channel, we always say a prayer of protection. So, Connie, let's say the prayer, and we'll begin the channel with Generals Lee and Grant.
God, please grant us your wisdom and protection. Grant us the knowledge that we can handle and keep us safe from things that will harm us. Keep the messages positive and pure love. Keep us safe from our egos. We ask these things in the light of the seen, the unseen, and the honesty of God. Amen.
Okay, we've got a great show. I've been looking forward to this myself because if you know anything about me, you know that I'm a Civil War nut. And these were two great people. So, Connie, let's begin with speaking with General Robert E. Lee, who was the commander of Confederate forces.
Welcome, General Lee. Thank you so much for joining us. Would you tell us about your early military career?
Well, thank you so much for allowing me to come through tonight. I truly appreciate the opportunity. I attended West Point, came out as a second lieutenant. I was given an engineering background and served in many, many different places. The Mexican War was the first war that came about after my graduation. I fought down there, was promoted. It was my first experiences with seeing people being killed and maimed. I was sent to many, many different places during my growth period. I tried to serve my country as best I could. I was, as I would assume different roles, I would be given higher rankings. And I was also very lucky. I worked under some great generals. I learned an awful lot from them. West Point is an interesting school, but you have to serve under generals that understand tactics and command. Things were so much different in the early and middle 1800s in fighting techniques. Sadly, our techniques were very brutal. Weapons were increasing at a great rate. The mortality rates were incredibly high. But I served my country. I served the Union for many, many years. When the South decided that they were going to separate from the Union, I chose to stay with the South because I was born and raised in Virginia, and I felt that I had an obligation to them. But I had so many friends on the Northern side, it was such a difficult choice.
It would be. Okay, while serving during the Mexican War, you met and served with Ulysses Grant. How would you characterize your relationship with him?
Ulysses was also a graduate of the Military Academy. He was a very good officer. He understood fighting techniques, and he was also an incredibly brave soldier. I got to know him. I got to like him. I got to understand him. And I knew at the beginning of the war that I was very thankful that he was in the Western campaigns and I did not have to face him with his troops. I watched as he was successful in the Western campaign, especially Vicksburg. I understood why Lincoln liked him so much, because he was not afraid to fight. And I understood that he truly was a great general.
What was your personal opinion about slavery at that time?
Personally, I was opposed to slavery. I also understood that the entire economy of the South was built upon slavery. Slavery was just a very common thing for the people that had wealth in the South. The cotton industry depended upon slavery, on slaves to pick the cotton. And cotton was the economic generator of the South. So I guess I just considered slavery pretty much a necessary evil at the time.
Yeah. Did you ever personally own slaves?
I had a couple slaves of my own. I treated them very well. I did not beat them or act against them or split their families. But my wife was quite wealthy, and there was a time that she did inherit several plantations worth of slaves. But I tried to be fair with them. If they opposed what I was trying to do, then I was forced I was forced to do things that I personally was opposed to. But the few slaves that we personally owned, we treated very well.
What would you say was the maximum number of slaves that you ever owned at one time?
My wife inherited over 200 slaves on multiple plantations. She also inherited a huge amount of debt. In those days, many of the plantation owners borrowed a lot of money. The cotton market would be up, it would be down. And it was expensive to keep slaves. But when my father-in-law died, at that time of my life, I did own over 200. She owned the slaves. Yeah. But I was trying to take care of the estate, so I did control hundreds of slaves at one point.
Okay. As a part of his will, he said that all slaves were to be freed within 5 years. And you waited until that five-year term was over to release the slaves. Why did you wait for the full 5 years?
Well, as I said, the plantations had an incredible amount of debt with them. The only way that I could pay off that debt was to continue operations using the slaves. The slaves all realized that they were supposed to have been freed. So there were many times that I had opposition from them, and rightfully so. They knew that they were going to be free individuals at some point, and they resented the fact that I still needed to operate them on the plantations. So I really had little choice. But when the 5 years was up, all of the slaves were freed.
I think I already know the answer, but did you ever personally whip any of your slaves?
No, but sadly I did have situations where runaway slaves were recaptured. I had great doubts about how to handle situations because I knew that at the one time I was going to release them, but I needed them to work off the debt. I did have certain runaways whipped, but I never did it personally.
What was your opinion of Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation?
I thought it would, I was very much against it. I was surprised when he did it. I realized that he was just trying to create problems for the Confederacy. But for him to just simply, with a stroke of a pen, give all of these slaves, many of which had no ways to earn a living, many of them were not educated in any way, many of them could not raise their families. I was very much opposed to it at the time. I realize that one of Lincoln's great goals was to free the slaves, and thankfully he did accomplish that eventually. But the emancipation was simply a way of making it more difficult for the Confederacy.
Sir, what, in your opinion, was the main reason for the Civil War?
My reason for participating on the side of the South, well, was, first of all, that I was from Virginia, and Virginia was a Southern state. The main reason, in my mind, was states' rights. Did the states have a right to secede from a union that was opposed to their way of life? The Southern politicians said yes. They felt that if the Union would not allow them to secede, then they would do it by force. The right of states to make their own decisions on their futures was, in my mind, the main reason. In my mind, slavery was secondary. I did not fight to maintain slavery. Personally, I was opposed to it, but there were many, many politicians that had their minds made up that the Southern states were going to be a separate country, and I felt that a state should have the right to make their own decision.
Did you think the South could win the war?
I never thought that the war was going to go for so long. I thought that there would be some skirmishes. I thought that both sides would realize the great turmoil and loss of life that they were taking. In the beginning, I felt that it would be a very short war. Once we started the serious confrontations, such as Manassas, I realized that this was going to be a huge situation. I knew that the South was at a huge disadvantage for a long war. I knew that the North had great industrial capabilities. I knew that the North had a trained army. I knew that they had more officers. I knew that they had long-term potential. Once I realized that the war was going to go on for years, I came to the understanding that it would be very difficult for the South to prevail.
Did you personally think the South should secede from the Union?
No. I personally thought that it should be worked out politically. I thought that there would be some type of a compromise, but as states were added, whether or not they would be slaveholder states became huge areas of contention. I realized that many people would not have any means or desire to compromise in this situation. I tried to counsel that war with our brothers was a terrible thing, but I had to follow what was taking place and try to protect my homeland.
What did you think when General Grant was appointed in charge of the Union Army?
I knew we were in trouble. The generals that had led the Union Army up to that point were very inept. Many of them were very reluctant to get into major engagements. Many of them were very poor tacticians. And one of the main reasons that the South was so successful in the beginning of the war was because of the people they had in charge of the army. Grant was one of the most successful generals in the Union. I knew that he feared nothing. I knew that we had our hands full. I was very sorry to see that they picked Grant as commander. That was the one choice that Lincoln made that really put the nails in our coffin.
Were you offered a command of the Union forces?
Yes, in the beginning I was offered to command the Union forces. You see, all of the officers that came over to the Confederacy were generally members of the Union Army. And I was offered command, but I felt that I had to remain true to my home state of Virginia. And that was why that I went over and fought on the side of the South.
What would you say that approximately what percentage of the soldiers that fought in the Civil War actually owned slaves?
Many of the officers were from slaveholding families, but generally none of the enlisted men were slaveholders. Keep in mind that slaves were incredibly valuable. In today's dollars, a slave would be worth $25,000 to $30,000 each. They were, the average enlisted man was a simple farmer, a simple worker. There was no way that the average enlisted person could own slaves. So I would say that maybe 10% of the individuals on the side of the Confederacy owned slaves.
As you watch from the other side, what do you think about the current campaign for reparations?
Because of the time that has expired, I do not think that reparations are something that should be considered. Keep in mind that many of the slaves came from Africa. They were totally uneducated. It was a terrible, terrible institution. I'm not trying to say that it wasn't. But while many slaves were mistreated, many of them were given the foundations of education. And at the end of the war, even though the carpetbaggers took advantage of the South for many years, they were given basically the legal right to be free and to be educated, and to be able to compete with any of the white individuals. Segregation was a terrible thing, and it lasted into the 60s. But today you see that major, major positions are being held by people of color. There will be a time in the very near future that there will be a great equality among all people. There have been years where individuals of color have been given advantages in being chosen by colleges and institutions of education. There have been times in the recent past that people of color have been given first choices in being chosen for employment. There are areas today where people of color are still being taken advantage of, especially in the inner cities. I would rather see the government put the funding that would go towards so-called reparations into better schools, better opportunities for vocational trainings, law enforcement. I think that those funds could be better used to assure absolute equality than to try to reward individuals for actions that took place over 160 years ago.
I think your thoughts are excellent on that. What was the reason you decided to invade the North?
I knew that we were suffering the loss of soldiers, and we were having some great successes in 63. I felt that if we could invade the North, if we could capture one of the major cities like Harrisburg, Philadelphia, then there was great anti-war sentiment in the North, and that we would be able to negotiate. I knew that we had limited resources, and when I decided to move my armies north in 63, I felt that it was going to be our last opportunity to drive a wedge into the North that would force negotiations for peace.
What do you feel was the main reason that you were defeated at Gettysburg?
I think that my lack of knowledge of the strength of the Union forces. Keep in mind that my cavalry was not there in the beginning of the battle, and in those days, cavalry was very important for bringing information. We were behind the curve in making decisions, and many of the plans that I had made were not being carried out in a timely manner and coordinated. I made a very, very bad decision in sending Pickett's division across that open area. I should not have done that. I should have listened to some of my commanders that were advising against it. But I also felt that Stuart was going to be successful in attacking from the backside of the Union line. And I felt that we would be able to take the area of Culp's Hill. All of those maneuvers failed, and because of it, the Union could bring reinforcements, and Pickett's charge was a huge failure. I made the decision to do it. The decision rests on my shoulders. But I think that lack of communication was a huge part of why we lost.
What was your opinion of Jefferson Davis, the president of the Confederacy?
I thought that he was very arrogant, and I thought that he was living in a dream world because he thought that it would be very easy to defeat the North in the beginning. I thought that he should have attempted to negotiate peace. He never took advantage. There were times that we were winning the war. If he would have advanced negotiations at those times, I think that Hundreds of thousands of lives could have been saved. But he was very obstinate and was not going to compromise.
When did it become apparent to you that the South was going to lose the war?
I felt that if we failed going north in 63, it was going to be our only real chance of success. When I returned after Gettysburg, I knew that we were going to have a serious problem being able to win.
After the war, why did you oppose racial equality for former slaves?
I felt that they should be free, but I saw no way that they could have equality because of their lack of education, understanding. Most of them did not have the ability to be self-sufficient in their earnings. I thought that it was something that should be given to them over time. I thought that the government would probably help, but in many ways I was wrong.
Okay, after the war, you supported Lincoln's successor as president, Andrew Johnson's, approach to the Reconstruction. Johnson offered a pardon to all Southern whites except Confederate leaders and wealthy planters, and he restored their political rights and all property except their slaves. This assured that blacks would not become landowners and left the government in white hands. Why did you take this approach?
I thought that the white population would help lead the slaves back to education, to employment. I thought that they would hire them. Sadly, what happened is they simply restored the power structure, and it took the government in the future to break down that power structure. I simply thought that the landowners would do a better job of taking care of the slaves.
As you watch from the other side, what do you think of the movements to remove Confederate statues?
The Civil War was a terrible, terrible thing, but it is something that has to be remembered in history. If you remove the signs of the past, then you will make the same mistakes as the past. Today you're seeing government that will not compromise. This is the same thing that we had in the 1850s. Lack of compromise leads to failure. I think that the removal of signs of history, of any signs, is a huge mistake.
Do you have a final message for us, sir?
Yes, I do. I know that many people understand the reality, the terrible reality of slavery. What is difficult is for people to think about slavery in the context of the times. Slavery didn't originate in the United States. It originated actually in Africa. It was in many, many other countries throughout the world. It was totally wrong, absolutely wrong. There was nothing good about it. But when you look at it in the context of history, the entire economy of the South was built upon it. There was no obvious way that slaves could be given freedom and the economy of the South to survive. If you look at it in terms of modern ideologies, there were other answers to it. But none of those answers were available at the time. The states wanted to protect themselves and to continue to thrive. That is why they split from the Union. It was a very, very difficult time, a terrible time, and many terrible mistakes were made. But you need to look at the time in the context of history. Put yourself in the position of people that lived there during those days. Don't look at all the things that happened in the past with the eyes of what is taking place and with the beliefs of present times. It was a very difficult time, and we all made horrendous mistakes. But we need to move forward, cooperate, understand that all people are created equal, that there is no difference because of skin color or any other reasons. So thank you for allowing me to speak. I thank you for this opportunity.
And I thank you for joining us. I very much enjoyed speaking with you, sir. Next, we're going to have General Ulysses Grant. General, welcome. You attended West Point. What was your opinion of life at the military academy?
First of all, thank you for letting me come back again. I know we've channeled several times in the past, and I've always enjoyed it. Life at the military academy could be very, very difficult. There were times that I loved it, and there were times that I was ready to leave it. Keep in mind, classes were very small. Today you're seeing huge classes. In my time, you might see 40 individuals attending the university. It was very competitive, and in many times, there was much hazing. There were no protections from hazings in those days. And you were taught basically an engineering background. Now, it helped me greatly in my career, but there were times that you did not receive the education that you should have gotten at the military academy. Much of the tactics that we learned from experience in them real time. So there were parts of military life at the academy that I loved, and there were parts that I hated.
Okay, you met and served with General Lee during the Mexican War. How would you characterize your relationship with him?
General Lee was a gentleman. He was a man of honor, and he was a man of true faith. He was an outstanding military officer. I was very, very impressed with him, and we became friends. I would also point out that we still hang out a lot over here on this side. He has a wonderful soul. He made decisions based on what he thought was his personal honor, and he chose to fight with the South. If he had chosen to fight with the North, the war would have been much shorter. He was a great leader, and he never made useless sacrifices for his men. He drove himself. He was very, very brave in what he did in the Mexican War. And he was a great tactician and student. So there's not much more I can say about him.
Sounds pretty good. What was your opinion of the Mexican War?
I thought it was a terrible war. I thought we were taking advantage of Mexico. There was no doubt that we had the stronger military force. And there was no doubt that we were trying to take Mexico's property. After we defeated them, we gained all of their possessions. We took California. Even though I did my best in trying to win the war, I felt that it was a terrible mistake that was made by our government to attack Mexico.
What was your opinion of slavery?
I was always very opposed to slavery. I thought that it was terrible. I thought that individuals should not be oppressed through slavery. I thought that it was an institution that should be eliminated. Great Britain eliminated it early. It was just, to me, something terrible that you would try to own another individual.
Did you ever own a slave?
There was a time that I owned a slave. I gave him his freedom. I did not take advantage of him. I actually was very friendly with him and enjoyed his presence. But there was a time that events came together that I owned a single slave. When I gave him his freedom, my wife and I were having economic problems. We were living very poorly. He was worth a great amount of money, as General Lee talked, and I gave him his freedom without any consideration of the funds that I could have derived from his sale.
What were your religious beliefs?
I always believed in God. I thought that there was a higher power, a deity. I didn't speak strongly of it. I did many things in my life that were not as laid out in the Bible. I drank. I swore. I did many, many things that would indicate that perhaps I didn't truly understand God, but I never doubted that there was a God.
Did you have a drinking problem?
There were times that I was moved to different locations in the military. There were many times that I was separated from my love and my children. There were times that I was very lonely, that I wanted to be with my wife. And there were times that I drank more than I should have. But I never let alcohol interfere with the leadership of my troops. It was basically something that I did when we were not being used, when we were simply bored. It was a mistake. I should not have drank as much as I did, but I never let it affect my leadership of the men, and my drinking never cost my troops any lives.
What was the worst decision that you made during the Civil War?
Towards the end of the war, we were chasing Lee and trying to encircle him and to end the war. We were at Cold Harbor, and I did not realize that Lee had outsmarted me and had entrenched his soldiers, and I ordered a charge that cost thousands of men their lives. It was a huge mistake, and I still consider that my worst decision.
Tell us about meeting General Lee at Appomattox.
We finally cut Lee off. My cavalry got in back of him and cut off his supply line. And General Lee sent me a message that he was prepared to surrender his army. He had been an incredible adversary. Every time I thought that I had him cornered, he outsmarted me. He was an incredible leader, and it was only through his leadership that the Confederacy survived as long as it did. When he sent me that notice that he was ready to surrender, it was an incredible moment for me because I realized the carnage was going to end. He came to Appomattox Courthouse with his men with great dignity. He surrendered his sword, and he asked that his men would be able to keep their weapons and their horses, and that they would be able to return to their lives with dignity. I allowed all of the things that he asked for. I would not allow my men to cheer or to celebrate in front of his men. His men had fought valiantly for many years. They had sacrificed more than you can ever imagine. They had endured pain, grief. They had watched their fellow soldiers die in front of them. They were, upon Lee's surrender, they were now our brothers once again. I could not tell you anything that the general did that showed any lack of dignity on his part.
You were supposed to attend the play at Ford's Theater on the night that Lincoln was assassinated. Why did you cancel going to the theater that night?
My plans were to go to the theater with the president on the night he was assassinated. The Secretary of War, Stanton, came to me, and he said that there was this young couple that would love to go to the theater with Lincoln. So I said, that would work out well, because Mrs. Lincoln and my wife, Julia, did not get along well. So I thought we would give this young couple the opportunity. I didn't realize that Stanton was one of the plotters in the assassination of Lincoln. And they did not want me present because they felt that I would react and possibly would be able to stop Booth. So it was at the behest of the Secretary of War that I didn't go.
While you were still alive, did you know who was responsible for the Lincoln assassination?
I didn't realize who was behind it. I knew that Booth hated the president. I was told many of the things, many of the lies that were taking place, and I believed them. I had no reason to believe that Stanton and Vice President Johnson had a reason to kill the president. It was not until actually towards the end of my second term as president that I started to hear rumors about what had taken place. I had no proof, and I had many other problems that I needed to address. Had I known and had proof, I would have certainly done something about it.
Yeah, we have a quick question from one of our listeners. Are you surprised the way wars are fought now?
I am utterly amazed at the way wars are fought now. Our tactics were primitive compared to the weapons we had. But our wars were fought really very close up. There were charges, hand-to-hand combat. Today, modern technology keeps battle lines separated, perhaps even by miles. The ability to kill hundreds of miles away is phenomenal. We watched from this side as military techniques progressed through the multiple wars that took place since the Civil War. Today, things are moving so rapidly. It is our fervent hope that the armies today do not use their greatest weapons, the weapons of mass destruction. But it is almost unbelievable to us, the techniques that the modern armies have.
Okay, we have another question from the chat room. That you speak so sweetly of your wife. Are you still together in heaven? And it must have been very difficult for her to be your wife, especially during the war.
The war was a terrible time of sacrifice for everyone, including Julia. Julia is my true soulmate, and we've been together many lifetimes, and we're still together over here. She is a wonderful soul. And yes, it was very difficult to be separated from her.
Yeah. Okay, why did you decide to run for president?
I felt that it was my duty. I always felt that service to my country was one of the most important things any person could do. I served my country as best I could. I sacrificed for my country. As I was in the military, I had no desire for politics because I watched what asses politicians could make of themselves. I honestly thought that I could help bring change. I saw that terrible things were happening in the Reconstruction of the South. I felt that there were things that I could do far better than what the current politicians were doing. And I had great popularity at the time, and the party talked me into running, and I wound up serving two terms as president.
As president, what was your policy towards Native Americans?
In the beginning, I tried to be fair with the Native Americans. It was a time of manifest destiny. Gold had been discovered in California. We needed to rebuild the treasury. We had debt from the war. As more and more people went west after the war, especially many of the people from the southern states, their homes were destroyed. They had nothing to return to, so they went westward. As they went westward, they demanded more land, and they were stealing the land of the Native Americans. I tried to be fair with them, but as we stole more of their land, they reacted in the way any normal person would, and the Indian Wars became more and more threatening to the settlers. So I gave orders that the Native Americans would be neutralized in multiple ways. I regret it from this side. It was something I was judged harshly for when I returned. But I did what I felt was needed so that the people had the land that they needed to expand. Had I not done much of what I did, much of the Western migration would have been done with many, many more people killed.
Okay, you said that you did not really like Reconstruction. Could you expand on your thoughts about what your thoughts on it?
Giving pardons to all of the white individuals backfired greatly. They basically tried to keep the black population as slaves. They formed the Ku Klux Klan. They performed great violence on the freed slaves. Slaves were not given the opportunities to own property. They were not educated. What we did just simply allowed the former slaveholders to basically come back into power. I wanted to try to educate, to help, to relocate, to reestablish the culture of the black individuals in the South.
What do you think of individuals removing the monuments from the war?
I think that it is a terrible thing, just the same as General Lee said. Congress passed a law that made the Confederate veterans of the United States. Soldiers that fought on the South and soldiers that fought on the North are the same in the eyes of the law. Mistakes were made. Cultural decisions were terrible. But, as General Lee said, you have to look at things with the eyes of the times. Try to understand that both sides felt that they were right. Both sides felt that God was behind them. Both sides felt that they were doing what they needed to do to preserve their culture. Neither side would compromise. I think that the monuments to the Civil War show what happens when people cannot compromise and come to mutually beneficial decisions. I think that anything that reminds us of our past should remain. You cannot pick and choose history. History is what it was and needs to be understood as such.
You are correct. Okay, as the general, you were responsible for the deaths of thousands of soldiers. How were you judged when you returned to heaven?
I had made mistakes, and the guides pointed them out to me. But the decisions I made as commanding general, or as a commander of the military, they stood on their own. I was not judged harshly for the fact that I led the armies. The Union Army was attempting to end slavery. It was attempting to maintain the Union. It was doing many of the things that needed to be done to assure the longevity of the United States. There may have been times that I made mistakes and cost many men their lives, but it was truly a mistake when it happened. I was not judged harshly for any of my military decisions.
What is your opinion concerning our government today?
I am seeing many characteristics of government today that were present before the Civil War. Before the Civil War, there were incredible animosities between the politicians. They could not debate civilly. They could not reach any compromise. Today, I'm seeing many of those same characteristics. Today, I'm even seeing smaller areas of the country that would like to become independent states. There is much political disparity between individuals. The two parties are beginning to hate each other. Newspapers are fermenting anger. Believe it or not, there are many characteristics that are taking place that took place in my time. Government has to learn to compromise. They have to serve the people. When they do that, many of the problems will be solved.
Yes. What is your opinion of our military today?
I am utterly amazed at the power of the United States military today. I think that it is imperative that they maintain their strength. If the United States military does not remain the strongest army in the world, then other countries will take advantage of the United States and it will cease to exist. With the modern technologies of weapons, it is only through leadership and strength that the United States will continue to exist into the future.
What do you consider the greatest problem facing the United States today?
I think that the military is in fairly good hands, but the politicians have created incredible debt for the country. In my day, there was debtor's prison. Today, all the politicians would be in debtor's prison for what they're doing to the country. If they continue spending with no sense of balancing the budgets, of being able to put social nets under the people, the budget, the great deficit, will be the great enemy of the country in the future.
Are you planning to reincarnate anytime soon? And if so, what are you planning to do in your next life?
Well, I'm not going to be president, I can assure you of that. I am considering coming back. I enjoy military lives, and I've had many reincarnated lives as members of different militaries. So I am considering it. I can tell you that my wife, Julia, has no intention of coming back. She said that she's pretty much had enough. She's in a good level, and I will probably be coming back by myself.
So she hasn't changed your mind since the last time we spoke with you.
No, not at all.
Today, descendants of slavery are seeking reparations. What is your opinion concerning that?
I do not think the concept of reparations is a fair concept, considering the time that has elapsed and considering the vast amount of money that has been spent by the government trying to assure racial equality in this country. While it's not perfect, people of color today have great opportunities. They're holding good jobs, and they're doing many, many things. I do not think that reparations are appropriate.
Okay, General, we really appreciate your joining us again this evening. Do you have a final message for us?
Yes. First of all, thank you for allowing me to come forward and speak once more. The United States is the greatest country in the world. It has the strongest military. It has great political problems. The politicians are more worried about personal power and their personal wealth than they are about the people. Instead of a civil war, which I lived through, the people need to join together to elect individuals that will help the country, that will lead the country forward, that will offer great leadership, that will do what is necessary for the United States to exist into the future. They must understand that the key to existence in this time of weapons of mass destruction is to have the strongest military in the world as a deterrent. This will not change any time in the near future. So the people have got to support the military. They've got to support the peacemakers. The law and order must be strong. So thank you so much for coming, allowing me to come tonight. Thank you for allowing me to speak. And may God bless all of you.
And I would like to thank the both of you for joining us this evening. You're both wonderful souls. God bless you both.
Okay, next week we're going to interview. We're going to do something a little different next week. We're going to receive messages from three of the lesser-known archangels. Barachiel, Raguel, and Jophiel. We've been told in our channelings that there are more than 30 archangels. The ancients couldn't identify different energies, so you basically only hear about a couple of them. So we're going to get messages from three of the little known ones next week. It will be very informative. Please tell your friends about it. You can submit questions for future guests through our email, channelinghistoryonparax@gmail.com. I've got 9 books available on Amazon. You can get signed copies on my website, barrystrome.com. Go ahead, Connie.
I was just going to say, I'd like to thank you all for joining us this evening. Have a wonderful week, and God bless you all.
We hope you enjoyed the show tonight. Slavery was a terrible, terrible thing, but you have to look at all of history in the context of the times. So thank you for listening. Please join us Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on the Parax Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to Channeling History. Tune in again next week for another electrifying episode, as we never know who will make an appearance or who will come through the portal. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2020. Our story begins by Kevin MacLeod. Licensed through Incompetech.com.